Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. Great to have you with us. We come your way every Sunday at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we also link to our guests' website so that you can continue to follow up on the information that you've heard about on this program. When I first saw the title of this book, I have to tell you that my mind went back to the 1970s, to a comedian who back then was pretty radical, pretty wild and crazy, as the slogan went. But one of the things was he talked about a book he had written about how to be a millionaire. That was a great line, and I'm going to use it here. It's not what my guest is suggesting, but I think it's kind of a fun way to get into this, because this tends to get to be rather a serious matter for some folks. And basically, he's writing all of these different books. One of them is How to Be a Millionaire. Step one, first, get $1 million now. And of course, the audience laughs. So there you go. And Vicki Oliver's my guest, and she hasn't written a book quite like that. It's How to Live Like a Millionaire Without Having to Be One. Vicki, welcome to our program. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yes, I just want to emphasize it's really about, you know, being frugal, stretching a dollar, and getting a little bit more out of your lifestyle.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that I happened to hear about this. I heard this little story. It's more mythological, I think, than anything else. About these two gentlemen, and they went out to breakfast one morning, and nice time, and the bill comes, and he sees the one gentleman sees the bill, and he reaches into his pocket and he pulls out the payment plus gratuity, and they leave. And a few days later, they get together for lunch. Same scenario: the bill comes, he pulls out the money plus gratuity, and off they go. And then dinner. And finally, the gentleman that was joining him asked him about this. He said, you know, this is interesting. I mean, I appreciate all of this, but how is it that every time we've gone out, you always seem to have exactly the right amount of money to pay the bill? And he tells him about this genie who gave him one wish. And he thought about it for a long, long time. And he could have asked for $1 million. Would have been simpler in one sense. But instead, he asked that he would always have what he needed when he needed it for the things.
That's a great wish.
Yeah.
That's
now,
a great wish.
That doesn't put multiple zeros and other numbers into your bank account.
Right.
In a literal sense.
Yeah, I love that.
But it does let you know that, as I try to remind myself when I feel the stresses, the universe will provide.
Right.
So
yes, I really like that as a wish.
But you're
I want to copy that in the unlikely event that I meet a genie.
Absolutely, absolutely. In the unlikely event. Now, money is power, but you don't need it to live like a millionaire. And yet people, including myself, keep telling the universe that I'm not wanting to be one of the one percenters.
Right.
Because I've seen the road that they travel, and I'm not real thrilled with it.
Right.
Because it seems like there's always this heavy price to pay, not only in terms of being ostracized by the 99%, the dislike, the hatred even. But then, of course, there are other prices as well in terms of, you know, everybody is looking for something. Everybody's, you know, trying to sell you something, the next
great, and that, and the other. First of all, in the introduction of my book, I really talk a lot about it because, you know, $1 million is more like a concept. It's more like what the person who asked the genie for help with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's more about not having to make huge sacrifices no matter how much money you earn. That's what my book is about. It's about stretching what you make into its best possible use, not wasting a lot of money on clothes you're never going to wear, you know?
Yeah.
This type of thing. It's about prioritization, and it does it in a humorous way. I mean, it's a humor book, but it has some kernels of wisdom in it, I think, you know? The other point is that, you know, I said in the introduction of the book that one person feels rich on $1 million, you know? another person feels like that isn't enough to pay for private schools. I mean, it's like the money is much in one's mindset, how much money is, does it take to buy happiness, you know? It really is in a person's head how much the magic number is. But this book isn't really talking about numbers. It's really just talking about how to make smarter choices with whatever the money is that you have.
I know that there are those, including myself, who, again, it's like, yeah, I'd like to have the numbers, but I'm not interested in, and I hear where you're going with this, but I'll mention this anyway. I'm not interested in the trappings
Hello?
Of opulence. You know what I'm saying?
I'm sorry, Ashley, you blipped out.
Blipped out, okay. Well,
something happened. I couldn't quite hear the end of your point.
Okay. Well, the one of the problems with those of us who are middle class or below middle class, and of course that group is growing, the below, is that, you know, we'd like to provide for our families. We'd like to give them nice things, good education, and so on and so forth. But we're not interested in living in mansions with gold faucets and toilet bowls and things of this nature.
Right.
We just want to. What was the phrase that I just want to give my kids better than I had, and
right.
You want to, and of course that wants to be passed down. So now the kids want to give their kids more than they had. Well, you know, it's like, well, where does this stop?
Right. That's all very interesting. But my book is really about, you know, how you position yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say you're working in a company, right? And let's say you are relatively young, right? And my book is about how you position yourself so that your superiors trust you to go out with clients. Like, they trust you to pitch business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about, you know, estate planning or anything
no.
like that. It's just
mm-hmm.
about, you know, how do you position yourself as a success before you are a success. And the reason to do that is so that people have more confidence in you. When they have confidence in you, you go farther. Like when they say, oh, you know, I can send this person to meet my clients. I feel good about sending him out to a business dinner or to pitch new business. It's about that. It's how you do that when you really are living on a shoestring.
Hmm.
That's what the book is about.
I like one of the things that you do talk about, too, about developing an obscure hobby. Go into a little bit of that, because I've got one or two, but I don't know that I'd call them obscure.
What are they?
Well, one of them is that I enjoy collecting, because of my business, I enjoy collecting music for production, as well as, strangely enough, sound effects. And then also, if I can find rare recordings of things that a lot of people are not aware of.
Right. So that is very obscure, and it's very interesting.
Okay.
And actually, I do talk a lot about collecting in the book as one of those hobbies that you can develop. Now, the reason to do this is it's really twofold, actually. The first reason is that when you are, let's say you are on a business dinner, I think it's sort of counterintuitive but true. When you're on a business dinner, the last thing you should talk about is business. Most people do not want to really drill into the specifics of business over a business dinner. The purpose of going out to dinner with a client or a potential client is to have bonding with that person, to develop a rapport with that person so that when you do business, it goes more smoothly. And so instead of talking about business, which, let's face it, can be dull, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hours and hours talking about business,
yeah.
You should just do that during the daytime. You know, you don't need to do that during a business dinner. So what do you talk to your clients about? One of the things where people form bonds is over hobbies. Whether they're obscure or just a golf game, you know, this is a fact that business happens over when you understand the person, and one of those great topics to talk about is a hobby. So the fact that you collect something unusual is something you can always bring up in a conversation, and then if you meet like-minded people who also collect interesting things, it creates a special bond.
Hmm. I think that this aspect of again, it sounds an awful lot like there's a great deal of a shift in mindset that also has to, this is all part of that shift that we have to make in order to, again, yes, you're going to want to live like a millionaire without having to be one. You don't have to have $1 million, but you can certainly upgrade certain things. It seems like it doesn't take much. And yet a lot of people really struggle with the process.
It's a mindset. That's really what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I used to be, before, this is my fifth book, and actually this was updated this summer, so it's like pretty new. It's like 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And before I wrote five books, I was in the advertising business, and I was a copywriter at various ad agencies. I live in Manhattan, big ad agencies and small ones in Manhattan. And one of the things that we had to do was we had to figure out how to brand certain products, like how you message a product so that it's appealing to a lot of different people. And it was my background experience in advertising that kind of informs this book, because this is about branding yourself as a success before you actually are making the money to really legitimately probably be one. And it's that type of thing, you know. It's like not buying five suits, but buying one good suit. Like one good suit will stead you further, you know. It's about not spending a lot of money on frivolous stuff that you're never going to wear and that you're going to throw out anyway. It's these types of things that the book really discusses. And it's composed as a series of essays about different aspects of building your confidence level and positioning yourself as a success.
Well, and I think maybe we might want to define that a little bit in terms of what a real success is, because obviously it is not necessarily having $1 million in the bank. I mean, because that's not what we're talking about here.
Right. And yes, exactly. So, you know, in my opinion, and this is just one woman's opinion, being a success is really about projecting confidence and depth of knowledge. Confidence and depth of knowledge. And there, you know, the knowledge isn't just about the business. It's not, you know, anybody can amass a certain amount of knowledge about their own field, right? That is to be expected. But when you go out and you're canvassing for prospects and you're canvassing for clients, those clients are going to necessarily may have different interests than yours. Like you collect interesting music, you know? I might collect paintings, right?
Mm-hmm.
But still, you have to be able to sort of talk to somebody about their interests. And you have to be able to do it with a certain amount of confidence and pluck, you know? Because some of the time you really are, like you're just starting out and you really just, you know, you don't have any money and you have to maybe persuade somebody who has a lot of money to entrust you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's about. It's like how you are and how you can position yourself as an ambassador for your company before you have really truly earned the credentials.
Yeah. This is fascinating, and I hope that our listeners are finding this interesting as well. Vicki Oliver's my guest. Live like a millionaire without having to be one, as is the title of the book, and very interesting. I like the way that it's presented. It's really kind of fun to flip through and read the various things that you have here.
Thank you.
That really kind of put it into perspective. One of the things too that that's always struck me in terms of trying to make that mindset shift, and I've gotten better at it. I stress a whole lot less around the end of the month than I used to, because I now take a look back at past months where I stressed at the end of those months a lot more, and I'm still here. My gosh, I made it, you know? I mean, it's a little
bit. And that gives you confidence.
Yeah, exactly. And so
that's true. Like when you have an obstacle, when you face an obstacle, and then you know, well, I've encountered this obstacle before, and I rose above it, and then you just know that the next time it comes around, you're going to rise above it as well.
So, Vicki, I'm going to ask you, in light of a lot of these infomercials that I see where these guys are trying to, and it is mostly guys, who are trying to get you to sign up for their program so that you can make millions of dollars and you can live and have yachts and this and that. And I'm sitting here going, really? why am I not buying this? Because I haven't seen that in the real world.
Right.
But
I know. I heard one of these radio commercials actually yesterday in the morning, and I have to say, I thought the same exact thing. I was like, wow, this person sort of sounds like a charlatan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really get that. But my book is, first of all, it's humorous.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it has kernels of nuggets of wisdom in it, I think, and gems, but it's actually a humor book. And secondly, I mean, this has little to do with, like, the actual money in
Sure.
your bank account, you know?
But in terms of sharing these attributes that you are wanting to pass on to folks, how did you come to this place where you wanted to do it in the first place, let alone wanted to share it with the rest of us?
Well, I live in Manhattan, which is one of the most expensive places to live in the world. And I've always felt like I was not, when I was in high school or whatever, I felt a little bit like I was an outsider. Like I went to a, you know, sort of a ritzy private school, but, you know, I was like kind of poor, you know, relatively poor in mm-hmm. my class. And everything, and I just always felt like I was always like inventing these ways, you know, how to cut corners here and how to cut corners there and how to get away with it. And I just felt like it was just a time to write that book. And that's what gave it to me. You know, there are things in the book that are from right out of my life experience that I talk about. You know, there's like a memoir aspect to the book. And there's also a self-help aspect to the book because I've written a lot of other books about career development and, you know, things like how you make a good impression. Like, when you walk into a room, 50% of the people will like you automatically and 50% of the people won't, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to do better than that. That's not good enough, you know? And so what are the little keys that you can do to make sure that when you walk in a room, you make a great first impression? Things like that are mm-hmm. all in the book.
I know that because of the way that I dress, living here in Santa Barbara, and I don't wear shorts and flip-flops, folks, but I have more of a Western look. Matter of fact, I've even been referred to as a cowboy, but I am not that.
Okay. I'm wearing cowboy boots right now.
Okay. And I don't own a pair.
I collect them.
I like that. That's very good. But I seem to be able to walk. We have our main street is State Street. And I'll take my walks and I have my black cowboy hat on and my jeans and long sleeve shirt and some. And even in the summertime, I can't help it. It's just what I like to wear. And just casually walking and just enjoying myself. I'll get a compliment on the hat. And I often think, if I wasn't wearing the hat, you know, but those are the kinds of, and I don't do it for the sake of getting noticed. I like the feel and I like the look.
Right. Well, you know, accessories are sometimes an expression of our creativity and our personality. And, I mean, in my book and also in other books that I've written as well, like, I always advocate having, you know, retaining some personality. Like, even if you're working in a very corporate environment
mm-hmm.
and you have to wear a suit and tie every day, I believe that people should retain their individuality. So it doesn't surprise me, like, just like I'm sitting here in Manhattan wearing cowboy boots and I've never been to Texas, you know, it doesn't surprise me that, you know, people, when you wear something and it makes you feel comfortable,
yeah.
like, think of the thing of, like, a lucky shirt, you know, or a lucky tie,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you wore it one time and it brought you luck, it brought you business, and then you wear that tie when you need to, you know, bring in business, and then you feel more confident as a result. So it doesn't surprise me that, like, you like to wear this hat and you feel very comfortable in it.
Yeah. Well, I have to say that it was funny when we moved to Santa Barbara in 2006, there was this news story, and I was wearing the hat even before the style anyway, before we moved here from Phoenix, Arizona. And I heard the report that Brad Pitt was bringing back the wearing of the hat. I'm going, you guys are full of prunes, because I've been wearing hats for the last 10 years.
Right. So,
but then right. again, I'm not Brad Pitt. I'm not up on the big screen, so I don't get the attention. But I mean, guys.
It doesn't really really matter.
No,
it's
not
like,
really.
Let's say you have a vintage vest. You know, it doesn't matter what the item is.
Yeah.
It's like it's something that resonates with you.
Yeah.
And that you feel great wearing it. I mean, like one of the things I talk about in my book are power colors, right? How to find like your power color. It sounds like you wear a lot of black, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I talk about that because my feeling is usually your friends tell you, inadvertently, they tell you what you look great in. You know, somebody comes rushing up to you and they're like, wow, you look fabulous, you know? What have you been doing? Have you been, you know, where have you gone? Have you been on vacation or something? It's usually an indication, I mean, most of the time you haven't been on vacation, and it's usually an indication that what you're wearing is, like, really flattering to you. And it's like I advocate that when that happens, and this is not a salesperson, this is like a friend of yours saying that, I say, well, when that happens, like take that garment, go out to a store, buy three other garments in the same shade and wear those because that's like your power color. It's the same thing as your hat. It's like some color that you wear that where you feel more confident. And because you feel confident, you're going to portray the confidence and do better that day.
Well, like I said, it's something that I've had my picture taken a number of times. I've looked at it and going, you know, I like that a lot better than without the hat. I don't know why. It's just one of those things.
Right.
But in terms of getting back to this whole aspect of mindset shifting, if you will, we get a lot of mixed messages from the world in terms of, on the one hand, being not being the millionaire. I came up with two that our government gave us, lovely mixed messages that they gave us, that they gave the immigrants the message that this was the land of opportunity, that you could make anything happen. Wonderful. That's fabulous. And then there's the other message coming from our beloved tax collection agency saying that if you earn too much, we're going to take more of it. I mean, they keep talking about taking more from the wealthy. You know, because they have more to give. Well, I don't know if that's the case or not, and I'm not here to argue the point. But now you have those two messages like, okay, on the one hand, it's the land of opportunity, but if I take too big an opportunity, they're not going to let me keep it all.
Right.
And so I don't know that I want to even bother. I'll just stay right where I am. And even there's a third message that, this is just my lot in life. I'm stuck here because this is where the universe wants me to be, and so I'll just trudge through until I die.
One of my favorite quotes, which is by some guy named Anonymous, or maybe it was a woman named Anonymous, is that attitude determines altitude. And I think there's a lot to be said for it. And, you know, I think Henry Ford also said something similar, which is, I'm sort of bastardizing it, but it's like, whether you think you will or you won't, you're right, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it kind of is sort of true. It's often like your own attitude that will determine your success. And so I personally feel like it's better, even if both messages are true, right? I think it's better to say, you know, it is the land of opportunity, and today is my opportunity, you know? And maybe opportunity knocks a couple of times, not just once. Because if you sort of wear those rose-colored glasses and you kind of think more positively, I think you come across more hopeful to people. There's statistics that say that people, pessimists or optimists, both prefer to hire optimists. You know?
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where, you know, if you can kind of look at the brighter side of things, I think it does one better, just in terms of their career, in terms of who they meet and the opportunities that open up for them.
Well, I know that I would rather have optimists working with me in what I do than someone who's just constantly complaining about whatever they're complaining about.
Right. I mean, you know, sometimes optimists are accused of being Pollyannas, and there may be some truth to that, you know, that there is a little Pollyannaism in it, but it's still, you just come across better. You know, it's like if you have a smile on your face, if you're happy, even if you're not, but you manage to convey it to people, you'll do better. People will want to be around you, and that's a lot of how to be successful, is to have people who want to work with you.
And that also means that you may have to make some real serious choices about the people you hang with.
I mean, there's a lot, I think, and in my book, I talk a lot about social networking also. Like, in no way is the book, you know, some sort of looking backwards thing. I mean, I'm talking about social media in it, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, you know. Mm-hmm. It's very up to the second or whatever. But I feel like the power of the social networks like Facebook, just as a case in point, or LinkedIn, is that, you know, who you surround yourself with often predicts your success. So if you're sitting around with like a bunch of people who are complaining and griping about their lot in life, you're not probably going to be as successful as if you're. It's better to be the least successful person in a group of friends, in a way, than the most successful person. If you're the least successful person, like you're surrounding yourself with successful people, and that usually is a good predictor of your own success. You may be behind them, but it doesn't mean you won't be successful eventually.
And I think that's one of the real big hurdles for a lot of folks is that, you know, it's the old adage about wanting patience and wanting it now. I want to be successful, and I want to be successful now. Well, it takes time to acquire the skills and the abilities. I mean, I didn't get where I am overnight. And I didn't do it. But another thing, too, is you never do it by yourself. It's always with the assistance of others.
Right, right. As Hillary Clinton says, like, it takes a village.
It takes a village, right.
And I think that in many ways it does because, you know, you need friends, you need acquaintances, you know, you all are helping each other, and you can't do things alone. It's just very, 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 very difficult if you think of yourself as a loner. It's so much better if you think of yourself as part of a community, you know, and you're going to look for ways to network with people, and hopefully they're going to look for ways to network with you, and it's all going to even out. Like, maybe the people that you help will not be the ones who help you back, but other people will.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Getting a good support system, if you will, of people around you can make all the difference in the world in terms of, you know, the things that you want to accomplish.
And also just the opportunities. I mean, I'm very impressed with the social networks right now, you know, with LinkedIn and with Facebook and with Twitter and with Instagram. I'm very impressed with that because it brings new people into your life. And there are no longer really the gatekeepers that there used to be. There's nobody between you and the person that you want to meet, you know? You can befriend that person easily, probably, on LinkedIn or Facebook or one of the social networks. It's really, really true. It opens completely new doors. And in my book, I advocate it as using a part. It's part of, like, you know, the tools that you use to get ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good. Some very good points. We're talking with Vicki Oliver. She is the author of her latest work here, having to do with live life like a millionaire without having to be one. We're going to continue talking with her here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Stay tuned.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We're talking with Vicki Oliver, the author of Live Like a Millionaire Without Having to Be One, and really kind of fun to take a look at this because, you know, you used the word several times, frugal, in terms of assessing the things that you need or want and maybe sprucing things up. We've talked about, you know, our clothing and our attitudes as well There are certainly a myriad of books and CDs and online programs, videos on YouTube and so forth that we can use to encourage ourselves to sort of bring these people into our scope of wanting to be better than we are today. And it's not saying that we're bad now. It's saying we're good now. We just want to improve. We want to be more tomorrow than we are today, and that's really a good thing. That sort of that evolutionary process, if you will.
Yeah. Yes, it's just. I mean, the way, let's just talk about, you know, just to bring it down, let's talk about social media for a second.
Sure.
I feel like a great use of it is to just kind of have a large pool of acquaintances from whom you can draw. Maybe I read an article by somebody that's an acquaintance of mine, you know, in the morning, or maybe I try to reach out to that person, or maybe I never do, but I know that that person is in my reservoir of people that I can reach out to. And it gives you a kind of a currency, you know. Maybe somebody else who you know wants to know that person and wants you to make a virtual introduction to that person. I mean, I just know that there are, you know, now thousands of people in my circle, and it's just so much more expansive than it used to be without this. But that doesn't mean, I don't advocate sitting in front of your computer all day long and just, you know,
yeah.
and just being in a bubble. I also feel like probably like the highest purpose of social media is eventually to have an in-person meeting, you know. So I'm a writer. I know I've gotten projects through social media, you know, writing projects. I know other people have gotten jobs through that kind of, you know, the way you link in with people can be enormously helpful.
You know, I personally am having to make a transformation in regards to my attitude towards social media, because for the longest time, I took the position that it's anything but social. There's really no connection there. Not like what you and I are doing, and not like what we might do if we were face to face in studio.
Right.
A matter of fact, there was a rather scary moment that was shared with me by a friend of mine who has a Facebook account. He and his wife were out to dinner, and this guy just walks up and says, "Hi, we're friends on Facebook." And it kind of freaked him out.
Right. And he probably looked totally different than his online profile shot, too.
He very well may have. and so from that standpoint, it can be a little unnerving. But I have seen some examples of the great manipulation and usage in a very positive way by people of the social media for great success on their part, and more power to them as well. Another aspect, too, you have a chapter in here called Show Some Class. Now,
right. That's about etiquette.
Right. Now, I grew up in a more of a middle-class family. And in the suburbs of Phoenix, and I didn't attend a lot of swanky parties. I didn't get invited to this thing and that and the other. I wasn't part of the upper echelon of individuals who did whatever that they did. And yet, I've of late in the last 15 or 20 years, I have been invited to some of these galas. Primarily because of my position and just other people that I know. So I get invited to some of these things. And I go there and I feel, initially, I would feel really uncomfortable. Like, I really don't belong here.
Right.
You know? Because I have, and I think it was more because I've had no experience in being in those settings.
Right. I just want to say, you know, it's my, sometimes I consider myself like almost a professional networker because I go to so many networking functions.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that I always feel right before I go, boy, I don't want to do this. You know, I think seriously, I've gone to thousands of networking functions, every single one. I'm like, you know what? I have better things to do. I don't want to do it. I just don't want to do it. And I think that the reason I feel that way, for me, my little thing is, I feel because I'm probably introverted, you know, because I'm a writer,
mm-hmm.
and I think writers tend to be a little more introspective and a little bit maybe introverted. And I just, like, you know, the prospect of walking into a room filled with strangers and having to kind of break through and talk to them really frightens me, you know? But then I get there, and when I get there, I take a little leap, you know, and I say, you know what? I mean, I'm here. I push myself to go, and then I'm there, and then I'm like, you know, I'm here. Now I'm going to see if I have any synergy with any of the people in this room.
Yeah.
You know, what can I do for them and what can they do for me? And maybe I meet 400 people at that event, but maybe only one person is a valuable contact. That's okay. You know, that's what I went for. I went to meet that one person. So I think if you look at it more like it's the needle in the haystack, it's not how popular you are, you know? It's not how schmoozy you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, can you find that one person who can benefit your life, your career, and or that one person where you can help them? And I think if you look at it that way, it becomes much more productive, fulfilling thing. Then you should go to lots of things. You should talk to lots of people. And if you don't like them or you're not connecting, you need to move on until you find the person where you do connect.
Right, right. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying.
You know, and, you know, there's all kinds. Sometimes I'm like, wow, I am wasting my time being at this professional networking event because there's nobody here who's an editor. You know, for me, there's nobody here who's an editor, or there's nobody here who's a writer. And what am I doing here? You know, but you just press on through. I mean, not everyone is going to, you know, reap rewards, well, but a lot of them will.
Well, and then there's another aspect to it, and I've taken a look at this from the standpoint of different jobs that I've had over the years. There has never been a job that hasn't taught me something.
Right.
So there is never an event, there is never a gathering that I may be invited to where I won't learn something. I won't meet someone. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be on all of those different categories. It may just be, I may find someone who has similar interests and we'll have fun talking.
Right. I mean, you're in my feeling about it is that when you're networking, you're looking for like-minded individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in your case, maybe the person is into music, you know, or maybe they are into radio, or, you know, there are these things, and you know, we all have our interests, and you're looking for like-minded individuals, and hopefully you find somebody, and, you know, maybe you work with that person eventually. It could happen.
Yeah.
I mean, as a writer, I should be, you know, my average should be better and higher because it's like I can always write about it, you know? If I'm having the worst time of my life, at least I can write about it in my next book.
There you go. You're going to be able to express your feelings about what happened in that regard. Absolutely. Absolutely. And then I tend to talk about it on these programs from time to time. I don't ever, you know, embarrass anybody, and I try not to embarrass myself through the process. But, yeah, I think that you can then see that's the other aspect of it. And when you start to broaden your perspective on the event that you may not want to go to, you begin to realize, all right, I didn't meet anybody there that I didn't accomplish this. I didn't accomplish that. There was no connection there, no contact there. But I did gain something that I can put down on paper in your context.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a little tip. I mean, for anyone who's listening to this, I have a little bit of a tip that I have sort of discovered through my many, many evenings of networking, which is that I think it's counterintuitive. I am not a believer in the elevator pitch. Here in New York, I go to many, many networking events, and everyone wants an elevator pitch, right? The one-minute pitch about yourself. And people practice these elevator pitches about themselves all the time, you know?
Yeah.
And I often go to a networking event, and I meet somebody, and they're giving me the one-minute, it's like a one-minute commercial about them. And I feel like this is not the way to start a conversation with anybody. Because once you finish the one-minute pitch, you're done. You're done. It's a monologue.
Yeah.
And unless the person has a very specific interest in the exact thing that you're talking about, you're done with the conversation. It's like, oh, that's very interesting. You know, let me go grab you a drink. And then they're gone. I don't think that elevator pitches, be they 1 minute or 30 seconds or 2 minutes, I just don't think that's the right way to engage in a conversation. And in my book, Live Like a Millionaire Without Having to Be One, I talk a lot about the art of conversation. It comes up in a lot of the different chapters because it takes more than a minute to figure out whether or not you have a bond with somebody.
Yeah.
It takes a long time, and you're better off, this is one of the reasons I talk about hobbies in the book, you're better off talking about neutral topics and trying to find a bond that way, if you can connect that way, than just sort of saying, okay, you know, I started my career here, I worked X years here, and now I'm a blah, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, that is not a conversation.
Yeah. But you've raised an interesting point in terms of something that I find so fascinating. I'm also very interested in language, not languages, but in terms of the vocabulary that we use today versus 100 to 200 to 300 years ago. And it's gotten smaller and smaller and smaller to the point where it's no wonder we have difficulty communicating. We don't have the vocabulary anymore to communicate what's really going on, in spite of the fact that there will also be those who say that words get in the way. All right, well, right. Enough said on that. But I love when I am listening to someone who, I was listening to someone's dissertation defense the other day. Fascinating. I was really fascinated by what she had to say. Afterwards, she asked me if I understood it. Now, I was not insulted by the question because I knew the woman very well and she knew me. I said, I did not understand every single word that you used, but as I listened, I got the gist of what you were trying to say from the context.
Right.
And I learned some new, I may not remember them right this moment, I couldn't repeat them to you, but I learned some new words.
Right.
You know, whether they were made up by her or whether they were legitimate words that maybe were in a 1460s Webster's or something like that.
Right.
But I wonder about that in terms of this whole business of conversing. I mean, you don't want to talk over people's heads, but by the same token, shouldn't there also be a certain element of lifting up of the language and of conversation? I've even asked the question. There's a television show that called Deadwood, and I listen to the vocabulary they're using in the Old West. You know, the profanity aside, and I asked somebody who was a linguist, says, "Did they really talk like that back in the Old West?" And said, "Well, yeah, because that was a vocabulary that they had to work with."
Well, I see where you're going, because also, I mean, people probably aren't reading as much as they used to read. And then, you know, I mean, books, if you just look at publishing as an industry, I mean,
yeah.
People are not really reading the way they used to read. And reading has changed.
Yes.
Let's put it that way. You know, reading is now kind of sound bites that you pick up on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
It kills me when I'm a writer and I take these writing classes, and it kills me when I hear people saying, "Oh, I didn't know what this word meant, so I just Googled it." You know,
it's like, yeah, yeah.
It's like, okay, I'll just Google it. You know, as I go through, that's fine. But yeah, people aren't reading. You know, they don't read fiction very much. They don't read longer works the way that they used to. And so there, you may be right. Maybe their vocabulary is less than it used to be. That's an interesting point.
So how does vocabulary play into this whole aspect of living like a millionaire without having to be one, especially when you talk about, I'll call it, you know, the stylizing, style changing, if you will, a personal brand and those kinds of things?
I mean, what I talk about is trying to amass a generalist knowledge.
Okay.
I feel like that is very helpful, to have a generalist knowledge. And so I give tips on little shortcuts that people can do to amass that knowledge, which I think will come in handy. Maybe you're at a cocktail party and people are talking about something and you don't really understand what they're talking about. I give little tips on some areas that it might be helpful to brush up on. Like, for example, it might be helpful to learn a little bit about art, even if it's not something that's a particular hobby of yours or an interest, but it comes up a lot. Art comes up as an investment, and also, I mean, lots of people talk about, you know, paintings that they've seen in museums. it comes up in many, many different ways. And it's just helpful to know a little bit about it. You don't have to be, you know, a thesaurus on it. But how you do that. And I talk about some online classes that people can take for free to learn, you know, and also maybe walking into a museum once in a blue moon can help, and things that you can do. And like, speaking of literature, I mean, I talk about little shortcuts that people can take with literature as well. If you have never studied, maybe you never studied any literature, it doesn't really matter. There are shortcuts you can take where you can get a smattering of knowledge about something that you know nothing about. I think it's helpful to sometimes pick up a newspaper and read a section that you don't have any interest in, you know? Just to develop your conversational muscle a little bit, to not always be talking about your own, you know, I mean, I do think it's helpful to have interesting hobbies, but I also think it's helpful to be able to sort of discuss other people's hobbies and to be able to learn about other people's interests. And to do that, you have to have a tiny bit of knowledge.
Yeah.
You can't just say to somebody, tell me everything you know about golf, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You have to be able to kind of talk the talk a little bit. And when you can talk the talk a little bit, you can also learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. Curiosity, just a general sense of curiosity can go a long way.
Right.
You know?
A little curiosity can really, really, really help.
Yeah.
And if you find yourself, you know, in a situation where you don't really just don't know anything about the topic, a lot of times the best thing to do is to just listen. Just listen, and then later, you know, go home, Google it, ask people about it after the fact. Like, you don't want to, you know, come off as an ignorant person.
Yeah.
You want to come off as somebody, you know, who listens and who learns.
Yeah. Well, that's what I think we're all trying to do in some fashion anyway. And I have to ask you, would you say that in that context of even of general knowledge, that maybe the thought that comes to my mind is that our educational system kind of sort of drops the ball in that regard, because it doesn't allow us to do that not in a real sense.
I think too early, or at least compared to how it used to be, people are being asked to sort of specialize earlier. Like, it starts in high school now, where, you know, kids are gathering their resumes and they're kind of specializing in high school.
Yeah.
But people didn't use to specialize until long after college.
Yeah.
You know, so now at the age of 14, you're almost expected to sort of have a career track and kind of know what you're doing and, like, organize your resume and your activities around what your potential career could be. I think it's crazy myself. I really do. You know, yes, I think that sometimes people may not have amassed kind of general knowledge, and it's helpful to have it. You just get along better with people when you sort of express a curiosity about what they do, and you can sort of talk to them about it.
Yeah.
You don't look at them in a gazed way.
Yeah. We basically say we put out a smorgasbord here on this program, and you come, you take what you need, you leave the rest, and what works for you works, and what doesn't, you know, you don't need to keep it, just let it go. I want to, first of all, thank you so much for joining us on the program and for sharing your ideas and your thoughts on the subject. One thing that I wanted to ask you before we wrapped up the program, and this is sort of a sidebar type of thing, but from your perspective, because this is, and yet it at the same time isn't about money, okay? But from your perspective and all of the research you've done, how would you define what money is?
What I'm talking about is the perception versus reality, you know? What I'm talking about are, here are a few tips that you can use to bridge the gap between where you are now and maybe where you want to be. And here are some things that you can do. In terms of money, my book has, you know, I mean, there's half a chapter in the book is actually about money.
Mm-hmm.
The other 17 and a half chapters are all about how you position yourself as a success before you are one. That said, I still think that very successful people can learn something from the book as well. I think it can, you know, it's a fun read and it's quick, but I also think even if you are really successful, you can have fun with the book and learn something.
Attain the trappings of luxury, no matter your net worth. Vicki Oliver, VickiOliver.com is the website, and live like a millionaire without having to be one. And Vicki, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
It was a lot of fun. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.